You are Locked On Giants, your daily podcast on the New York Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giants fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants. I'm Ed Valentine of Big Blue View, along with co-host Pat Trena of Inside Football, The Athletic, Forbes, and a host of other places. Patty, how are you today?
Doing well, Ed. Happy Monday, brand new week, and congratulations to you and your family on your son's graduation.
Well, thank you. Of course, I missed the rookie minicamp because of that, but as you reminded me when I, when I told you that I kind of wished the timing was different, family first, and of course family first, and now all of my kids are done with all of that school stuff. So I can relax.
And you weren't the only one to miss rookie minicamp because they had a family member graduating. So if it makes you feel any better, there were at least a couple of other people that were absent that normally are there. But
well, it was obviously you love to see these guys and get first impressions, but there's plenty of time, and we will get to the rookie minicamp, some overall impressions from the rookie minicamp shortly as we do today's show. But this morning we seem to our original plan was to do a full review of the minicamp, but we seem to have had an explosion of Giants news today. So we will cover a couple of those things. We'll talk about Eric Flowers, reportedly finally showing up to work with the Giants. We will talk about some of the roster moves that the Giants announced today. And we will discuss some thoughts about the minicamp, mostly from Patty since she was there and I was not. But, we'll cover all of that. So, Patty, let's start with the Eric Flowers news. Finally, we heard today that Flowers has decided to show up, get to work. He's the last of the Giants players to do so. I believe every other player showed up, at the very first, voluntary workout. Your thoughts on Flowers, finally, coming in and getting to work with the Giants?
I think it's about time, and I don't know if Drew Rosenhaus, the agent he hired to work with him, or represent him, I should say, had something to do with it. I imagine he did. But, look, Flowers just wasn't giving the NFL a good look by sitting at home and pouting and not working with the Giants. I mean, when you are fighting for a job, you want to get in there. You want to be with your teammates. You want to show your new coaching staff that you are capable of carrying that load. And unfortunately for Flowers, he chose to stay away because apparently, reportedly he was upset that they added Nate Solder. You just can't do that. Life is not always going to go according to the way you want it to go. And when you sit there and say, well, screw that, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home, that's just not a very good look. That's not a professional look. So you got to think that Drew Rosenhaus talked some sense into this young man and said, hey, look, maybe your history with the Giants or your future with the Giants is short-lived, but if you want to go elsewhere, if you want to continue your career, you can't sit at home and pout. You've got to get your butt in there. You've got to work. You got to put something on film so that your next team, if there is indeed a next team, can take a look and make an evaluation. And I just think that, this is long overdue. And mind you, I understand that this was a voluntary program and he didn't have to be there, but you have a new coaching staff, it is in your best interest to get there, and finally Flowers realized that.
I happen to agree with you, Patty. I think that, it was a bad look, and for whatever reason he chose to stay away, it was probably the wrong move on his part. Whether his end game is to come in and prove to the Giants that he can play right tackle, that he can win that job, that he can still be a viable, quality NFL offensive tackle, or whether, you know, his end game with Drew Rosenhaus is to eventually, you know, get out of New York, maybe try to facilitate a trade. He wasn't helping any of those objectives by sitting home, by working in Miami or wherever he was, you know, because it just didn't. It's obviously going to look like a pouting, disgruntled player refusing to show up to go to work. The only way he can help himself, no matter what his end game is, and, you know, to be frank, no matter what the Giants' end game is with him, you know, they will say, you know, we want to work with him at right tackle. We want to allow him to compete. And maybe that is true. You know, maybe their end game is to hold on to him until training camp, as we've discussed before, you know, and then look for a suitor, you know, when there's an injury or when a team just realizes that it just doesn't have anybody, you know, that they feel good enough about, you know, at one of the tackle spots. Maybe the Giants' end game is to try to build up his value and move him. We don't know. None of that, you know, from Flowers' perspective or the Giants' perspective, was getting helped by him sitting home. So it's a good thing, you know, that he's finally come to work.
This, you know, if I'm Eric Flowers, I get out there, I do what I can, you know, put something on tape and show that you are willing to work at it, that you're not going to be a problem child, that you're not going to pout every time something doesn't go your way. And you know, he's got to get back to the basics. It's basics. It's okay to, you know, be angry when you lose. I mean, Gettleman always says, I want guys who hate to lose. But, you know, show that you hate to lose your job here and that you're willing to fight for it, you know?
Sure. And, you know, let's move on, Patty, to our second topic. And you talked about, you said, you know, lose your job here. And we heard this morning that, you know, some of the Giants players did lose their jobs this morning. The Giants waived six players, added six new players, you know, after the rookie minicamp. A couple of those guys are, you know, veteran players. Several of those guys are, you know, rookie undrafted free agents. It was interesting. Pat Shurmur over the weekend had promised that the Giants wouldn't be afraid to shuffle the bottom portion of the roster, you know, to move guys in and out if they thought, you know, they found some guys who were better fits for what they wanted. And so maybe you would have expected a couple of moves today. But six moves was an awful lot. And for me, the big one, the one that caught my attention, was the waiving of last year's sixth-round pick, you know, Adam Bisnawati, who was the one and only offensive lineman that the Giants took a year ago. That really is giving up on a draft pick pretty quickly. Although it was a previous regime, you know, maybe I'm a little bit surprised that Bisnawati was among the guys let go.
I can't honestly say that I was surprised. I mean, and, you know, we'll talk about it obviously when we get to the mini camp, but in the mini camp, it was funny. The offensive line drills were right in front of the media, and I honed in on that because I have been saying now for weeks that the offensive tackle position is very thin, and they really need these guys to step up. You know, they need for Chad Wheeler to continue to show that he's taking steps forward. They need for Eric Flowers, now that he's in camp, to show that he's willing to work and take a step forward. This young man Gates that they signed, they need for him to show something. And it's a very thin position depth-wise. And when I was watching Bisnawati at the minicamp practice, I thought to myself, I always go back, just to give you a little idea, I always go back to what I wrote the year before because I want to have a starting point. And when I compared what I saw with what I wrote the year before, I'm not so sure I saw much of a difference in him. And I also thought that it said a lot about last year when, you know, this was a young man who they traded up to get, but who stayed on the practice squad until the very last week of the season when the Giants had absolutely run out of options given all the injuries that they were having. And I thought it spoke volumes that, you know, if you go back in the season when Bobby Hart initially was injured, that instead of calling Bisnawati up, they had to move two or three guys, I think two guys it was, around in order to fill the gap. So that was not exactly a positive development for him, and it made you think and say, gee, maybe he's a little further away than you'd like him to be. And
well, you know, maybe I should have – maybe the alarm bell should have gone off when I saw, you know, looking at the reports over the weekend, when I saw that, as you said, even with the really thin – situation that the Giants have at the tackle position, you know, whether Flowers is in camp now or not, when I saw that they played Bisnawati at guard both days, and you want to give the benefit of the doubt and think, well, you know, maybe they want to take a good look at whether he can be, you know, part of the guard depth, but maybe in reality that was just, we know he can't play tackle. He's here. We have to look at some of these other guys, you know, so we'll put him at guard for a couple of days, you know, to get through mini camp. Maybe, you know, just looking back on that, maybe that was a bad sign, you know, that he wasn't long for the Giants, that they were lining him up at guard for those couple of days to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of guards in camp, but, you know, I wonder with this Nawadi, if I'm not mistaken, coming out of college, didn't he have a back issue that affected him throughout his college career? So I think I know he had something. I want to say it was a back, but whatever it was, you wonder if maybe that affected him in his development, that maybe, you know, he wasn't able to get low proper pad level or drive or whatever. I mean, so you want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt, because I do think he worked hard. I think he tried to, you know, make a go of it, but you're absolutely right. You know, they put him at guard for this past minicamp as opposed to tackle. But still, you look at the fundamentals. You look at the footwork. You know, is he driving his hips up underneath him, you know, when he's going against the blocking sled? Little things like that, and you just didn't see that on a consistent basis. And when you have that many guards on your roster, and, you know, they've got John Greco, they've got
John Jalapio,
John Jerry. Right. I mean, you've got a lot of guards now, you know. So it was just you got to be sharp with your practice and your technique and everything. And again, I don't know if an injury was bothering him, if something was bothering him physically, but he just unfortunately wasn't able to make the grade.
Patty, let's turn now to some of the players that the Giants actually signed, and that leads us into actually talking about, you know, what you in particular saw, you know, during the 2 days of minicamp. Let's start with the players that the Giants added. Was there anyone in that group, I think they added six players, anyone in that group who during the 2 days of practice that you saw that really, you know, jumped out at you, that, you know, when you watched, you're like, I'm pretty sure that the Giants are going to sign this guy, you know, based on what I'm looking at?
Yeah, it's interesting. Before I answer that, though, just so as everybody knows, what I do when I go into the minicamp practices is I put my roster away and I write down numbers, because I don't want to, you know, say, you know, put it in my head that I'm going to look at a specific guy. I want to see who jumps out at me. And then later on, I go back in and when I write up my reports, I write, you know, I look up the numbers to see who I was writing down a lot. And a guy I wrote down his number quite a bit was the running back, Robert Martin, the Rutgers kid. And, you know, I made notes about, you know, him being kind of shifty and having good vision. You know, I just thought he ran the ball very well. And it's interesting because, as you know, that's a position where they're a little thin now because, you know, yes, they have Saquon Barkley. He's going to be the guy. But they had put Paul Perkins on then they had waived him, and now he's on the reserve non-football injury list. So you knew they were kind of going to look at another running back for that spot. And Martin, you know, I go back and I look at my notes, and I wrote his number down a couple of times in each practice. So he was a guy that stood out. The other guy that I know everybody was kind of high on was cornerback Chris Lewis-Harris. You know, it's interesting because the Giants have, 13 or so cornerbacks on the roster. They're going for the quantity approach as opposed to, you know, necessarily the quality approach, or maybe they're just – actually, I should say they're hoping to find quality from amongst the quantity. And Lewis-Harris was a guy who was, you know – I thought he was a playmaker. You know, in coverage, he did a good job with turning and running with the receivers, staying on their hip, you know, swatting balls away in coverage. So he was an interesting guy that I thought might have a shot at sticking around. Then you know, there are a few guys, obviously, that, you know, were already signed at the start of the minicamp. I guess we'll talk about them in a little bit. But those two guys of the six that they added today are the ones I would say stood out the most.
And I guess for me, you know, obviously, as we've said, I wasn't there. But the one for me that jumped out was, I believe, the Giants, you know, added another veteran guard to, you know, to their stable of offensive linemen. You know, signing, you know, Chris Scott, another guy that, you know, Dave Gettleman, you know, was familiar with from their time in Carolina. And probably, you know, Gettleman, having been familiar with Scott, who should have kind of looked at him as a serious candidate to be added to the 90. And it's just kind of interesting that the Giants are stocking up so much, you know, in the interior positions, you know, with that's going to be quite a competition, it looks like, for roster spots at the backup guard spots.
Yeah, I mean, look, Dave Gettleman loves his hog mollies, and it was interesting because at the practices, there he was out on the field watching his hog mollies do their thing. So, you know, it's actually a refreshing change, Ed, because how many years have we said, my gosh, the Giants are building the roster from the outside in and not really giving enough love to the interior positions? Well, Gettleman has said already, I want to build this roster from the inside out because it all starts in the trenches. And it's so true. You know, you look at the core philosophies, run the ball, stop the run, and rush the passer. Two of those three, and you can probably make an argument for the third position or the third stance, but at least two of those three have to do with the interior. And, you know, in the past, the Giants haven't had the depth, you know, and we saw that last year. When injuries started hitting that line, the offensive line, they didn't have the depth, and there was a noticeable drop-off. So you've got to see what you've got. And even if these guys don't make the roster, you know, maybe you put them on the practice squad, maybe you put them on the short list of guys you call if you have an injury and you need a replacement. So kudos to them for finally, you know, doing it the logical way.
Sure. You know, I find it interesting because I go all the way back to when Dave Gettleman had his introductory press conference with the Giants. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately because of the difference in approaches. But, you know, Gettleman talked about Jerry Reese and how friendly he is with Jerry and, you know, how he worked with Jerry Reese for years. But his approach has been so different. And I find that what he's been doing is more or less undoing a lot of what Jerry Reese built over the last couple of years. And, you know, it's different, you know, it's a good thing because, as you said, all three of those categories, you know, rush the passer, you know, stop the run, run the ball, they all have to do with the fronts on both sides. And I thought for years the Giants just sort of tried to get by there, and maybe they're not in perfect situations yet on either side of the ball. You know, but I find it interesting, you know, when I think about the relationship between those two men. I find it interesting that a lot of what has gone on in the last few months is basically, you know, Dave Gettleman undoing or trying to undo, you know, a lot of what was done the last couple of years.
Yeah, and you can also, you know, extend that to some of the contracts that Gettleman, you know, has dumped. For example, you know, finding a taker for Jason Pierre-Paul's contract, you know, instead of saying, okay, you know what, James Fetcher, find a spot for him, you know, and we're going to keep that contract. You know, Gettleman, I guess, sat with Betcher. They talked about it, and they came to a conclusion that maybe, you know, they can get something for Jason Pierre-Paul because he wasn't quite a fit, and they did. So in the process now, yes, they have a lot of dead money that accrued because of that transaction, but they're going to be far better off next year when they have to re-sign Odell, when they have to re-sign Landon Collins, and I don't know who else is up for renewal off the top of my head, but those are the two big ones I would imagine. So, you know, look, Gettleman is taking it systematically. He's not going to undo years' worth of damage, you know, and again, you can't undo the years of poor drafts. You know, but I think what Gettleman is doing is, you know, systematically he's going through it and he's saying, okay, what can we live with now versus what do we absolutely have to address right away if we're going to get back in this thing? And it's just a matter of, you know, it's going to take time. It's going to take, you know, a couple of years, maybe, I don't know, I would say maybe 2 years before they really, you know, get everything all squared away and straightened out. But, you know, certainly they can turn it around this year and at least get back in the playoff hunt. I'm not sure if they'll be a Super Bowl team. You know, I think it's a little early to say that, but, you know, you got to see how the roster shapes up, the 53-man roster, and then, of course, you've got to make sure that you don't have the injury bug tearing through the roster like you did last year.
Patty, let's turn to one more thing, you know, before we call it a show. Let's talk a little bit about the draft class. And just, you know, since I wasn't there, I'm going to give you the floor here and I'm going to let you, you know, give some of your impressions of some of these players, just, you know, having seen them and having had a chance to talk to them, you know, for the first time on Friday and Saturday. Just a few things, you know, that stood out to you, you know, from the guys in the draft class.
Okay, I'll go down the list. How's that?
I'll start with
Saquon Barkley. Love this kid. I mean, first of all, he's what, 21, 22 years old, but he has the wisdom and the maturity of a guy who's like at least 10 to 15 years older. You know, he got up there very humble, reiterated that, hey, I don't want to just be handed stuff. I want to come in and earn it. He talked about, I'm going to be the first one on the field and the last one off. And he, true to his word, he was the last one off the field we saw on the first day of the practices. So very interesting runner. You know, he comes as advertised. You know, one thing I did notice, I was watching him against the blocking sled, minor little nitpick, because, again, it's against the blocking sled and not real competition. I noticed, like, a little stutter step that he had before he hit the sled. But if that's the you know, the only thing I saw, which I think is the only thing I saw that I said, oops, that's a something they got to work on. That's something they'll coach out of him. But I think he's going to be a phenomenal player. Can't wait to see him in live reps, you know, once they put the pads on. And, you know, the big thing for him, the big question mark I have for him is just how well he's actually going to be with pass protection and also in remaining patient, because I think that was one of the knocks against him, whether or not he can remain patient and let blocks develop. So, but very encouraged by him. Will Hernandez is a stud, ladies and gentlemen, a stud. This kid is big. He's solid. I mean, think Chris Snee. Okay, in terms of, you know, I don't want to say, I guess, in terms of size, okay, I think Chris Snee in terms of the nasty streak that he brings onto the field, and, of course, off the field, like Chris Snee, you know, just a gentle giant of a guy. He has a nice little sense of humor, likes to chuckle and laugh. I had an opportunity to speak one-on-one with him. wonderful human being, very competitive. You can see some, you know, some minor things in his technique. For example, when he was doing his striking drills, he wasn't, you know, locking his elbows and whatnot. And you know, some, again, minor things, but oh gosh, Eli Manning's probably going to love this guy and just love knowing that he's got a huge, huge man mountain there protecting him in that interior. And it's going to be so fun to watch. Lorenzo Carter, long length, very active. And what struck me about him, no wasted motion off the snap. You know, it almost reminded me of OC Umunyura, who when the ball was snapped, boom, he was off and running. And you could tell Carter loves to rush the passer. He's another one I sat with one-on-one, told me if he had his druthers, he would do it all the time, rush the passer. He says, but hey, whatever they need me to do, I will do. But he's got a quick first step, and he just uses his length to fend off blockers and just kind of, you know, do his thing. So what I'm curious to see is how he does in coverage. A couple of times, you know, it looked like he was beaten in coverage, but it could be because they were going at half speed and maybe he didn't want to come up and nail the, you know, the ball carrier for you know, since it was a non-contact drill. Okay, who's next after Carter? I don't have
Hill.
The order in front of me. B.J. Hill, he's the defensive tackle. Very quick. Again, against the blocking drills, when they were going against the sleds, he was the one who, you know, as soon as the ball was snapped, boom, right into the sled. I mean, before you knew what hit you, he was into the sled, and he hit the sled really, really hard. So he's got a good strike, a good first step, good power. Looked like he got low with his pad level, which is what you want to see. So I'm really excited to see him again when the pads go on because, you know, look, with the offensive and defensive lines, you're not going to be able to tell everything because there is no contact. So you have to kind of rely on the drills to, you know, give you an overview. All right. I know R.J. McIntosh, he didn't work because he has a minor medical condition that he's saying that hopefully he'll be cleared for the mandatory mini camp next month. And I know I'm missing – Lauletta. How can I forget Kyle Lauletta? Your guy. I had a couple minutes with him. Super nice guy, very intelligent. Reminds me a lot of Davis Webb in his demeanor. You know, he's the type who's coming in, not worried about, you know, all the extra stuff, the competition. He's worried about keeping his shop in order. I thought he was a little all over the place on the second day, whereas on the first day he was a little sharper. But again, you got to remember, these guys are having a ton of stuff thrown at them. They had all gotten their iPads on Thursday night, and, you know, with time, as they learn the playbook, they're going to be a little less hesitant, maybe a little more, you know, be able to play a little faster or practice a little faster. The thing with Lauletta that stood out to me was a lot of his passes on the second day were high. So he had a little bit of a live arm there. I'm not sure why, if it was because of the pressure. And the reason why I say I'm not sure why is because with our vantage point, we can only see so much. Unfortunately, we had a wall of bodies in front of us, so we couldn't see the plays as clearly as we do on during training camp when we're on the sideline. But, you know, Lauletta's a smart kid, you know, seems to be grasping the offense well, and you know, it's going to be an interesting battle between him and Davis Webb.
All right, Giants fans, with that said, that's a pretty good rundown of minicamp and your Giants news for Monday. So we will call it a show for today, and we will be back with you again tomorrow. All right, bye-bye now.